And I am here with Jenny Davidson, the CEO, Executive Director of Stand Up Placer. How are you doing, Jenny?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, I enjoyed getting to know you a little bit and learning a little bit more about your organization. But let's tell Sacramento about Stand Up Placer. Who are you guys?
Great. Yeah, we have been in business for 40 years. This is our 40th year. And we serve survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and sex trafficking in Placer County.
Wow. Okay. So that's three very important needs that I think a lot of us don't think about because we go to on our day-to-day lives. And let's dive into each of them individually, if you don't mind.
Sure. So we've been with Rape Crisis the longest. We are the Rape Crisis Center for Placer County. And that started in the mid-70s back when the East Bay Killer was running rampant in our community. So a small group of women started sort of a phone chain for Rape Crisis. And from that,
it has... That's how it started? Was the East Side Rapist?
Well, it at the same time period. So we have very little exact, like, what people were talking about at the time. But it was the same year, same time period.
Yeah, that's when I was a kid. And one of the incidents took place not too far from my grammar school. And so I just remember that highlighting. And now... Sounds like we've caught that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was in second grade at Sierra Gardens here.
I went to Sierra Gardens too. Well, okay.
We'll have to go look at our
I would have been, I think, sixth or seventh grade right in that time. Yes, okay. But I look a lot older than you. This is awkward. Okay, so you have the rape crisis side of things. Mm-hmm. How big of a problem is it? Just to put our mind to that.
Yeah, so in 2017, we assisted about 400 victims of sexual assault. But by the end of October, we had already more than doubled all of the under 18 sexual assault victims we served this year compared to last year.
And this is just Placer County?
Just Placer County.
Wow, you think of Placer County as maybe not having that kind of... issue. I mean, it's like a safer community than maybe an inner city.
Well, I mean, we might think that, but it happens everywhere. And our domestic violence numbers are over 2,000. Our human trafficking numbers are about doubling every year. So the problem is skyrocketing.
You said problems skyrocketing, doubling every 2 years. Is that what you said on the domestic?
So, no, that was one very specific population. So from 2015 to 2017, we more than tripled the number of services we serve for our overall client base.
Is it because the problem's getting worse or you're becoming more well-known?
It's definitely both.
Okay.
We get a lot of our referrals from law enforcement. Right when they respond on scene, they call us. We send an advocate out right away. So all along, we would have received all of those phone calls. Part of it is some of the stuff with the Me Too movement. People are knowing that they can come forward and tell us what happened in their past. But the biggest increase we're seeing is under 18 with the sexual assault part. With human trafficking, we see basically between like 15 and 23 is our biggest population, but we've seen it into senior population as well.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, walk us through a tip. Maybe there's nothing typical, but you get a call from the police. There's been an incident, and Placer gets called. What happens?
So the first thing we would do is we would respond on scene, wherever that is. If it's a human trafficking victim, you know, maybe that's happening at a hotel or it's happening in a sort of makeshift brothel somewhere. Or if it's a sexual assault incident, we frequently meet them first at the hospital and we're right there with them through the whole process. With domestic violence, maybe their home, maybe the law enforcement agency where they're coming in and letting them know something happened.
It sounds like they're all three very different. I'm sure that there's some commonality in there, but maybe... Let's break down like a common one, maybe,
right,
if you will.
So we would get the phone call and we respond on scene, and then they may need to come into our safe house. We have a safe house that has 55 beds. It's in an undisclosed location. It's a beautiful, beautiful house with five kitchens and computer room and a child play area, and it's
okay.
Just
so
gorgeous.
You remove the victim from the place where the crime is happening or where the negativity is, and put them into live in your safe house.
Right, and they can be there for up to 90 days. And then we have a housing program where they can live for 12 to 24 months while we pay their rent. They get back on their feet. Maybe they get their associate's degree, or maybe they're just working on their therapy they may need, or maybe they're, you know, working on a job or career. And so that gives them that sort of that moment to catch their breath and get back on their feet. During that time, we're in the home every single week doing case management. They have access to therapy, and we have a thrift store where they can shop for free, because they usually escaped with like just a backpack and maybe, you know, hopefully they have their birth certificate, but they may not, and not very many clothes, and they have kids in tow, and all of them can come right into our safe house. And we work with them on all the different things that they may need to get back on their feet.
So these are people that don't really have a family support structure. These are all the people that are, I guess, have no other help.
Well, sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's just not safe for them to be with a family member, because if the abuser hasn't been caught yet, they're out looking for them. Law enforcement's trying to find them. So if they're coming into our safe house immediately, it just may be that law enforcement hasn't found the perpetrator yet. A lot of times, domestic violence victims tend to leave their abuser 7 to 10 times before they leave for good. So those first 3 or 4 times, maybe they've burned some bridges with family or friends, and maybe the family is tired. Maybe they've gone back to a dangerous situation too many times and the family doesn't feel like it's safe to take them in. So there's a lot of different reasons why they may need access to our safe house.
All right, so let's break this down, because it's the three components, and I'm having a hard time getting my arms wrapped around the enormity of these problems here. Okay, the domestic violence piece, mm-hmm. that one is what portion of your business is, or your efforts are geared that way?
That's our biggest one. So okay. Like I said, last year sexual assault was about 400. Domestic violence was well over 2,000.
Okay.
So it's well over 2,000 folks who needed about 50,000 services. So they may need therapy, they may need case management, they may need legal assistance. We have attorneys who can help them get a restraining order or custody or different things like that. So that is absolutely the biggest portion of who we serve.
And the other part that you mentioned was the human trafficking mm-hmm. side, or you said makeshift brothels. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to imagine that happening here in Placer County.
Yeah, it's really rampant. In 2015, we served about 10 victims of trafficking. And so we wrote to the state and said, we need this designation. We need to be a human trafficking victim service agency, which gives our clients the right to privilege communication with us. So we can't be subpoenaed. Everything they tell us stays between us. 2016, that number went up to 83. 2017 was 142. And the first 6 months of this year was 146. So it's already more than double last year, or on track to be more than double last year.
So you are helping the victims. Is there any part of the effort that's focused on the root cause of this?
We just got a brand new grant to do some prevention work, and we're going to be mapping the county for where this is happening, how we can really saturate certain areas with more intervention and prevention in order to get in earlier. And so that's absolutely part of what we want to do. And to get in and talk with young people, and we're in schools and stuff, to tell them about proper communication, healthy relationships, what does that look like? Because we see that it's generational. And if they experience it in their family of origin, they may just not know how to change that and have a better life for themselves.
Okay, big problem, but this is a business too. Besides focusing on your clientele, you've got to have the operational piece there to deliver these services. Let's talk about how you divide your time. You've got facilities all over the county. Mm-hmm. How do you divide your time? Where do you focus in terms of facilities, in terms of like mind share for you?
Right. That's huge, because it's not just it's facilities. We have 6 different facilities plus all the housing out in the community. But then also we have one side of our business that's all program and looking for best practices and staying on top of, you know, how do we serve this client who slept outside last night because they were afraid to go home, or, you know, how do we intervene? We just changed it to where our safe house is one of only 172 in the U.S. and Canada that's pet friendly out of over 6,000. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's that program piece, but then there's the development side as well. And so while our services have tripled in the last 2 years, our funding has only doubled, which it sounds like, oh, they're funding doubled. They're great. But when your services triple, you know, it's hard to get 1 and 1 to equal
yes.
3. And so we have to be super creative about how we can meet that end as well. Our grants are, it's fantastic that we get federal funding and we're able to help with the very core services, like we are the county's crisis line. We do help, you know, with that therapy, that immediate response. But what if, you know, we have a sexual assault victim who needs a new mattress, you know, things like that? What if we have a domestic violence victim who can't escape because their carburetor went out 2 weeks ago? we have to take all of that out of our unrestricted funding. And so we're about 90% grant funded right now because our grants have increased, which has allowed us to take more survivors. Mm-hmm. Our unrestricted hasn't seen that sharp of an increase. And so we, you know, we have a thrift store on Douglas between Ross and Hobby Lobby. And that is a, you know, a revenue generating stream. And, you know, I'm just out there telling folks about what we do and how they can come alongside and be part of that.
So when you use the term development side, that's basically you're trying to drive revenue.
Exactly.
That's what that piece is about.
Exactly. And seeing that, that's also the only area where, you know, we can do more with staff development. We can do more with, this year is the first year that we bought new chairs in like 20 years. So that everybody's super excited that they have a new chair, yeah. You know, where things like that other businesses take for granted that obviously you're going to have chairs that are comfortable, that are ergonomically, you know, correct and things like that. Nonprofits, a lot of times we're sitting in the broken chairs you threw away when you got your new chairs.
Yeah. Well, wages, I talk to entrepreneurs all the time. I own a number of businesses and wages end up being at the top of the expense line, or expense side of things. And I have to imagine wages are a piece of this. How many employees do you guys have?
We have about 45 employees, and wages definitely are because we're service, right? What we're doing is we're responding to the hospital. We're not buying or manufacturing widgets. We're sitting with somebody after they've been assaulted, and they don't even know that they're thirsty. They just know that they're having a hard time forming sentences, and we have to see, somebody, who's getting them water? They're shivering. Who's getting them a blanket? They don't even know to ask for a blanket because they're so traumatized. So we're helping with just very basic survival things up to, everything that they would need. That's something that costs money because you have to be sitting there at their side throughout that trauma.
Is there a role for volunteers?
Oh, gosh, yes. Like, we couldn't function without the volunteers. We have amazing, fantastic volunteers who they can help in our thrift store if they want an opportunity to jump in and volunteer quickly. Or our events, we have some fantastic events they can go and volunteer with. But in order to ever work with any of our clientele, they have to go through a 72-hour state-mandated training. And we put that on, and it's free of charge, but it's very intense, and it's you're hearing about kind of some of the worst stories that you will ever hear, and understanding how to respond to trauma, how to believe survivors, how to get them to that next level. And so that's a little bit harder, and it's harder to get people who are prepared to take on that kind of a training.
I can only imagine it's hard to get those people. And I'm the chairman of Allegiant Giving. It's a 501c3 as well. And we're all volunteer, and volunteers are different to organize than people you are paying. There's a different set of challenges when in requiring them to show up for work and things like that. How do we deal with that kind of stuff and dealing with volunteers, corralling them, if you will?
Well, that's absolutely true. But at the same time, if somebody's volunteering for us and they've gotten through that training, like, they're super passionate about it. It's a calling. They're not doing it because, you know, they just want something to put on their resume. They're doing it because they want to save somebody's life. And they know that them showing up that day is literally going to save a life, and they're excited to be there. Once they're trained, we don't have a hard time getting volunteers to show up. It's just getting people to sign up ahead of time.
I can imagine it's mainly women that are the victims, and mainly women that are part of the support structure as well.
Actually, so 15% of our victims are male.
Oh.
So we do help a lot of male victims, and we do have some male volunteers, but not as many as we'd like to have. And I think that sometimes men are reluctant to volunteer because they think we wouldn't want male volunteers, mm-hmm. and we totally do. Not just for that, but if you think about our safe house at any given time has about 40 kids in it. And if you can imagine 40 kids who are staying there for 90 days, and, you know, they're mostly there a lot, it might not be safe for them. It's fantastic to have a male volunteer mm-hmm. who's willing to come and, like, play with Legos with them or something yeah. and just be a positive male in their lives.
I can imagine the perpetrators are predominantly men. You know, I hear mm-hmm. the stats. I'm not aware mm-hmm. of this, but you hear mainly about that on the news and things like that. And I can only imagine that there becomes trust issues towards men mm-hmm. in general, and to bring a good guy into the environment it could be pretty therapeutic.
100%, for sure, for the victims, but even more so for the kids. For the kids to get to see a strong male who's kind, who isn't scaring them, who isn't, you know, threatening or any of that, it's life-changing for children. And for the young boys who are in our safe house, and they see you know, I can grow up differently. And for the young girls in our Safe House who see, I can expect something different in the family that I have someday. It's phenomenal.
Just in closing thoughts, what would you like Sacramento, the Sacramento region, the Sacramento business community to know about Placer? And, you know, how is the best way to engage with you guys?
So first, we're at standupplacer.org, or like us on Facebook with Stand Up Placer. Also, I'd love to share, a crisis line is 1-800-575-5352. If you're listening to this right now and you know somebody who has, you know, they told you something, or like sort of the hair on the back of your neck has stood up a few times, then refer them to us, or call yourself and find out what they may be eligible to as far as services go. First thing is, believe them when they tell you that something's going on. And then secondly, if you're somebody who's listening to this and you're astounded by the numbers and you want to know how you can support, how you can come alongside of us, you know, you can go to that same website, get a hold of me. You know, we'll come out and we'll talk to your business. We'll talk to your coworkers and tell them just how they can come alongside and be part of saving lives and empowering survivors.
Well, Jenny Davidson, on this Thanksgiving weekend, we appreciate what you do with Stand Up Placer, what you do for our community. We need people like you. This is what coming together in a community is all about. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
You bet. If you like our entrepreneurial stories, if you like the messages that we bring that inspire, if you want a little more Mark Haney, not everybody does, but if you do, feel free to subscribe. Feel free to be part of our community, engage, comment, share. I want to get to know you better. You want to get to know me better. Follow me on all our social media platforms at The Mark Haney. I look forward to knowing you better. And let's get to know each other better so we can help build these businesses that we love.